I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Planet Premier League podcast. Each week, Cesc Fabregas, Nader Manua and myself talk all things Premier League.
As a player, you don't have time to talk.
No.
You don't have time to make a plan. You just need to deal with wave after wave after wave.
We watched Coach Carter and he said, oh, afterwards, the game's just about doing this for your teammates. And I remember looking around halfway through the film and half the squad was asleep.
Planet Premier League. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Welcome to the Sports Media Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Deitch. My producer is Patrick Antonetti. This is a mini pod. Also, we're using a new technology here. We'll see how it sounds. You could let us know. It's a mini pod, and who better to have for a mini pod than John Lewis, the editor and founder of Sports Media Watch. This will specifically focus on the NCAA tournaments. Welcome back, John Lewis.
Oh, thanks for having me.
No, thank you. I appreciate you making time. Okay, we're going to start with the women's tournament, which, you know, we could honestly do an hour on this women's tournament, John. We're not going to, but there's so much to talk about. But let's start here with, I would say, arguably the biggest story in the tournament. Like, maybe not as big as the team that won, but pretty close just given the significance of it. So South Carolina's win over Iowa averaged 18.9 million viewers for the title game across all of the ESPN/ABC platforms. This absolutely shattered the record for the most watched college basketball game, John. It ended up, of course, beating the men as well. Had you told me that this would be the number for the final prior to the tournament, I would have been pretty close to stunned. I would not have been surprised, and Marshawn and myself sort of predicted this, that the women could possibly beat the men if Caitlin Clark and Iowa were there. But man, I still see that 18.9 million viewer mark, and I'm like, this is like unicorn status. You've been doing this a long time. What's your reaction to that number?
Well, I would say something similar. Obviously, that is beyond even the highest expectation going into the tournament. I think it was obvious that if Iowa got back to the final, that the viewership was going to be up from last year. And anything above 9.9 million, you are in at least some proximity to a lower rated men's final. So the idea going in was, well, if the men have another really bad final matchup and it's on cable, that could drop down to maybe 11, 12 million viewers. And the women, if they're up, might surpass that. It wasn't something where I thought that the men's final could increase over last year and the women would still beat that number by 4 million viewers. So, you know, even with the expectation before the tournament that, hey, the women's final might outdraw the men's, I would never have thought that we were talking about 19 million viewers. I mean, I would never have expected that to be a realistic number.
A couple things there, John. I think both of us obviously would certainly agree that the reason for this kind of elevation, like first and foremost, is just the casual fan interest in Caitlin Clark. She just became a massive story. You see the numbers with Iowa, and we'll get to sort of more on that in a second. But here's the thing I want to ask you. The last 2 years, the championship was on ABC, the final. Prior to that, it would be on ESPN, ESPN2, you know, the family and networks. Essentially ESPN, let me make sure I ask that. You might even have this. Essentially ESPN since 1996, and then prior to that, CBS. How much is the net being on the network a part of this, independent of the popularity of Caitlin Clark in Iowa?
It helps, but I don't think it's a driving force. The fact is, based on the numbers that Iowa drew on ESPN in the Elite Eight and Final Four. You know, which honestly, the Final Four number against UConn is more impressive than the national title game number, because it's, you know, Friday night on cable at around 10 o'clock to get 14.4 million. I would say that's a more impressive figure to me than 18.9 million on over the air on a Sunday with a title at stake. You know, to me, it's definitely helpful to be on ABC, but I think these numbers, I mean, if that game had been on ESPN, what are we talking about? Maybe 15, 16 million?
Maybe. Yeah. But so, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's impossible to know, but if I had to guess, I don't know. I give it 3 or 4 million extra because it's on ABC. But I mean, I don't know how you could really know for sure, but it does matter. I mean, it does matter, right? It does bring it to a different kind of level to have the network, but I'm with you. I think there's a sort of, if you want to really sort of nerd out, there's an argument to make that the 14.2 million viewers on ESPN, that game peaked at around 17 for UConn and Iowa. I mean, that's an incredible number. Like you said, on a Friday night, it's, you know, at the time, like like compared to everything that was non-football, essentially, like, it blew it out. I guess, like, it sort of leads me, and here's another one too I want to sort of get you on. The number that followed that game was 7.1 million viewers, right?
Yeah. There was the lead-in.
The lead-in, my bad, for South Carolina and NC State. And you can make an argument too that that's an incredibly unbelievable number, sort of given where the sport was. So it leads me to ask you the question. One of the things I think that was really impressive to me about this tournament, as great as the numbers were for Iowa, I think some of these non-Iowa game numbers are really, really incredible and makes you think, like, you know, there's some sustainability here just given the interest. How do you see it?
I think you're exactly right. I mean, I think, you know, look, obviously, let's be totally honest here. You know, it's not at the level of what we're seeing with Clark, right?
Of course.
But the fact that you can get 7.1 million for a nondescript game involving an NC State team that doesn't have a tremendous following, and they're getting blown out by South Carolina in a game that really wasn't particularly compelling in the second half, that's a big deal. Some of that obviously is Clark and people tuning in
yes.
for her, but
agreed.
You know, the lead-in spot is not the same as the lead-out spot. And yes, there is benefit to leading into a higher profile program. You even saw that with Clark earlier in the year when the game against Ohio State got 3 million leading into the NFL playoffs on NBC. So the lead in, to be in the lead in slot is good, but it's not the same as the lead out. You still have to pull your own weight in the lead in spot because people can just tune in along the way. So the fact that that game had 7.1 million to me is really telling.
Yeah, here's a couple other things I want to get to. Again, if you're going to be honest about this, unquestionably, Caitlin Clark is the massive driver here. I think you are being unrealistic if you think next year's final will be close in terms of viewership to this year's final. Listen, I am as big a women's basketball watcher as certainly anybody in our space, John. I hope that happens. I have to be realistic and honest. It would seem almost inconceivable for it to happen at those numbers. I think if you get next year, whatever, 7-8 million, you know, viewers for the title game, you should be ecstatic. We'll see. The one thing that I was impressed by when it came to ESPN is they did do, in my opinion, everything in their power to try to get some momentum leading into both the national championship games and the final. They sent, obviously, a studio show live to Cleveland, which was obviously praised to the hilt, and rightly so, the L. Duncan, Andrea Carter, Chinee Ogumke, Aaliyah Boston, Carolyn Peck show. They had a second screen option with Sue Bird and Diana Taurasi. They had other mega cast stuff. They went very, very heavy on SportsCenter and shoulder program. I mean, the First Takes of the world were talking about this. They've always been very good about sending and having full-time women's basketball writers for their .com. They had social media coverage. So I bring all this up to ask you, how much of the viewership number that we ultimately saw on that Sunday was amped up by all the surrounding stuff that the company did to try to bring people into that game?
That's a good question. To me, I think obviously the ESPN hype machine is effective in some ways, but at the same time, you know, a lot of this with Caitlin Clark was organic. And the fact is that, you know, you didn't need the ESPN hype machine for her to draw disproportionately well, albeit at a lower level on NBC and Fox during the regular season or on the Big Ten championship on CBS. So I think obviously that helped, but I mean, I don't want to give too much credit here in terms of, you know, ESPN, you know, kind of making this a thing. I mean, I think this would be a thing independently.
Yes.
Anything ESPN did.
Here's my favorite one. I love the ones like this. Fox has the game, okay? Big Fox has the national title women's basketball game this year. Same thing. Caitlin Clark in Iowa versus, you know, Camilla Cardoza, Dawn Staley, and South Carolina. Is the number the same, smaller, bigger?
Good question. I'm going to say probably slightly bigger because Fox would put it in prime time or at the very least in that early evening slot of about 5 o'clock. You know, Fox is, you know, ABC is the only one of the broadcast networks, the only one that has this, issue with preempting its Sunday night prime time. CBS allows sports to run over 60 minutes all the time. Fox obviously aired NASCAR in prime time just a week ago on Sunday night, and NBC, of course, also. And ABC is the only one where, you know, you got to get the game in at 3 o'clock to make sure that there isn't a second missed of America's Funniest Home Video.
Exactly. It's so infuriating. But you're dead right. It's a good take. Actually, it'd be interesting. I don't know the answer to that, but I do think Fox would have put it later. I don't think there's any question.
Every network would. There isn't a single network out there other than ABC that would have had that game on at 3 o'clock.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the answer to this, but I'd be curious to see what the NCAA organizationally would think about moving that back, if they'd be for that. You know, there is an advantage of a 3 o'clock game of people who are actually on site. You know, they can travel, they can get home, maybe they can get out of there on Sunday if they're interested in that. But yeah, I mean, in terms of viewership, if that thing was a little bit later, I think it's higher. I'm not so convinced that Sunday night at 8 o'clock is necessarily would have brought more viewers in the Sunday afternoon window, but I do think a little later would have.
You're exactly right, because Sunday night is not as big as Sunday afternoon.
Exactly.
The NFL. But when we talk about Sunday afternoon, that's 4:30, 5 o'clock, maybe even into 6 o'clock, right?
Yep.
It's not, you think about the NFL, the biggest window is 4:25.
Right.
It's not 8:20 Sunday Night Football or 1 o'clock, the early games.
Yeah, no, exactly. All right, a couple more here. For as we head forward, actually, let's even forget about that. Before we get to next year, women's college basketball, you're very familiar, obviously, with the WNBA viewership. I don't think there's anybody actually in the country who sort of puts out more WNBA viewership than you do. So kudos, and you've been doing that for a while. So kudos to you. How much do you think there is a sampling of some of the people who are curious about Caitlin Clark during this NCAA tournament, who may be willing to check out the WNBA, who maybe have never watched a game before?
I think there'll be a lot of that. ESPN just announced its WNBA programming schedule, and Indiana, Connecticut. Caitlin Clark's first game will be on ESPN2. That is May 14th. And her second game on May 18th will be on ABC.
ABC, yeah. In fact, that's one of the only ABC games, I think, early, right? You would have to check that. But yeah, that's... I don't love ESPN too, but whatever. But that ABC, that's great. That's the one that's a good. That's the team they're playing. Obviously, has stars, and you're getting on a network.
You know, I mean, look, this comes down to when you have a deal with ESPN and ABC, you are sacrificing creativity and flexibility with the schedule, because you're not going to see, hey, you know, this is Caitlin Clark's first game. This is an opportunity to showcase the WNBA. You're not going to see ABC come in and air that in prime time on a weeknight, right? Fox might have.
Yeah.
You know, but ABC's not. I mean, CBS put Megan Rapinoe's final NWSL game in prime time.
Exactly. Big CBS. Yeah.
Yeah. Big CBS. And Megan Rapinoe, her drawing power, even with the U.S. women's national team, isn't close to what Caitlin Clark has.
100%. Yeah, no, I'm with you. That should be. Yeah, I don't know what's. I'm not as familiar anymore with the ABC primetime schedule, but it's not like anything scripted is doing anything anymore, right?
The only night of the week that ABC has anything relevant is Sunday, obviously, with American Idol, and Wednesday, I guess, with Abbott Elementary, which people talk about it, but I don't know that the ratings are so great, but certainly it's an acclaimed show. So, I mean, every other night of the week, I mean, what do they have? What, the sixth season of The Conners? Look, the reality is that this is ESPN and ABC, particularly the ABC side of it. It's the least creative, the least invested in live sports of all the broadcast networks. And this is kind of what you deal with as a result. I mean, first of all, even the Saturday games, that doubleheader, May 18th, 1 and 3 o'clock. I mean, that's 1 o'clock on a Saturday. You expect there to be, Caitlin Clark can draw.
Yeah.
But 1 o'clock on a Saturday is not exactly creating the best set of circumstances for that to happen.
Yeah. All right. That's all really interesting stuff. All right. Then finally, if you had to take a guess as to next year's women's college basketball regular season, just as of like sort of an examination of viewership, what would you expect?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think viewership will remain elevated, but I think basically it's not too hard to guess because I think the games without Caitlin Clark will draw pretty much as well as they did, which means they will be drawing very strong numbers. You'll be getting maybe 2 million for the SEC title game again, maybe another one or 2 million for the Pac-12, some of those Fox windows, but you're not going to get the 3 million in the regular season that you were getting with Caitlin Clark. You might get another 3 or 4 million for some of these early round regional semifinals and finals in the tournament, but you're not going to get 12 million or 6 million. And you're certainly not going to get, 19 million and 14 million, but you might get 7 million again. Who knows? And all of those numbers that they were getting for the non-Caitlin Clark games are really good numbers. I mean, for this tournament, given where it was, given you can go back to 1998 and there was a Final Four game that had fewer than 1 million viewers involving NC State. You know, given where this tournament has gone, has been before, where it is now, I think, is it won't be the same as it was. But, you know, hey, is the NBA the same as it was after Michael? You know, is golf the same as it is when Tiger isn't playing? No, but you can still do quite well even without those heights.
All right, let's take a look at the men, John. The UConn's rolling of Purdue in the finals, averaged 14.8 million viewers on Turner's networks. That was up, I'm doing math here, 1%, very, very slight. Might be a little bit more, my apologies. Basically, 14.7 was 2023 on CBS. So it's not an all-time low, but it's close to the all-time low. The trend for the men's final since 2019 essentially is down. You could, if you want to be the optimist, make the argument, well, it's cable. It's not a terrible rating in 2024, given the game was a blowout. At the same time, this thing's been going down since the 2010s. We can talk about the why, but big picture, how did you view the final game number for the men?
I think it's all right. I mean, it's nothing special, but you got to keep in mind the NBA Finals hasn't gotten to 14 million since 2019. The World Yep. Series last year, you know, was 9 million, 11 million. The reality is that, I mean, in this scenario, 14 million is pretty good. It's on cable. It's UConn Purdue. It's obviously a matchup people were interested in from the standpoint of, you know, Zach Edey versus Donovan Klingon, but these are not, you know, big above the fold names. And look, I mean, when all is said and done, 15 million viewers on cable television in 2024, you know,
it's not terrible. I agree with you.
Yeah. No, not only is it not terrible, it's excellent. It's the biggest cable audience for basketball all year long, almost certainly, surpassing the 14.4 million. And it was actually 14.4 for that Iowa-UConn game. They adjusted that up, surpassing that. So, I mean, to me, look, no one is going to pretend that this event has not lost a lot of viewers, right? It had literally twice as big an audience in 2015. Now, that was because of, you know, that was the big Kentucky year when they were trying to go undefeated. And it's not really necessarily that they've lost half their viewership over that span. But certainly that's not a great long-term trend. But, you know, this is just the way it is in sports. If you're not the NFL, you just got to be satisfied with the 1% increase, basically.
All right. If you're sort of looking for some good news, some optimism, the Final Four was up over last year, 4%, 12.8 million across TNT, TBS, and True TV. Up from last year's Final Four, which was on CBS. You know, one of the stories we used to, all of us used to write about, John, was like, what's the, you know, what's going to happen when the NCAA tournament is on, you know, TBS in the late rounds as opposed to CBS? You know, once upon a time, I was like, man, it's really going to hurt them. But, you know, I look at last year's number. I'm actually, in some ways, I don't really know anymore. I don't know what to think. I think what I just ultimately think is, like, this tournament needs stars desperately, which is very hard because all these players obviously are, the best players are one and done, or some of the best players now don't even play in the college ranks in the United States. And so I don't know if there's really a solution other than you just, in some ways, you got to hope you get like a Zion Williamson, like, right? And people are just interested in a couple of these star players who they think are going to be NBA All-Stars, and that's the year maybe the tournament pops. Other than that, I don't really know what the solution is.
No, I agree completely. I think matchups matter more than the broadcast versus cable aspect, although obviously that does matter. Your ceiling is going to be higher on CBS than it is on Turner. And your floor is going to be lower on Turner than it is on CBS. But so, you know, hey, all things being equal, you're going to do better on CBS. But all things are rarely equal. And I will note, the last two times Turner has had the Final Four and title game, the viewership has been up over the previous year on CBS, entirely because of matchups, right? 2022 was the golden year, Duke UNC, you got Kansas in there too, and also Villanova, although Villanova is not a great draw. And then this year, the increase, mainly you can, you know, attribute that to last year being a very low year, very weird, you know, matchups that year, and CBS underperforming. But all in all, I think if you're, you know, the broadcast versus cable aspect matters, but it doesn't matter as much as who's actually there.
Do you think, is there anything that, there's not really anything that CBS or Turner can do, right? That's the sort of the thing about broadcasting this tournament. I think ultimately, it's not like there's not a lot of shoulder programming on this. It's not like the tournament isn't well produced, because it is. It's not like people are interested in gambling in brackets. But, you know, where I think there's still a lot of room to grow for the women's side, where I just think more, there could be a lot more coverage and a lot more shoulder programming. I don't know what the men can do. I mean, unless it's just like, you know, I will say this, and this was always a long time issue with the women's tournament as well. This year, I heard less talk on the, like, shoulder adjacent talk show programming or sports talk radio about the men's college basketball tournament than I've ever had before. I don't know if you felt the same way, but I've heard this, literally no one seemed to talk about these teams during the regular season for the most part, I guess, unless you were in one of these cities where you have a great team.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, look, people are interested in those big superstars, like you mentioned, Zion Williamson. They're also interested in the programs, the Dukes, the UNCs, you know, Kansas. Those teams, you know, obviously UNC was a top team, Kansas was as well, but, you know, you didn't really have that dominant. I mean, look, if this season plays out differently in the ratings, if Duke is as dominant as UConn was, right? And people are more interested in Duke being that kind of dominant team because they can root against them, and some people obviously root for them. There's more of that black and white, you know, polarizing aspect with them than there is with UConn. Realistically, you know, I've said it before that UConn's the San Antonio Spurs of college basketball. And I think that continues to, you know, things continue to bear that out. They don't inflame anybody's passions at all. So if you have to have a dominant team, at the very least, they can be a dominant villain that people can root against, a bit like the UConn women, although certainly when they were really, really dominant, the ratings were not very good.
All right. Is there anything else that's on your mind when it comes to this tournament and just sort of broad thoughts before we get out of here?
Well, you know, like I said before, that I didn't think that the broadcast versus cable was that important compared to, you know, who's playing. And I maintain that. But I do think that continuing to have the Final Four national title game on cable every other year through 2032 is probably not great. Cable continues to shed, subscribers. I also wanted to mention the time slots I did talk about before with the women's game. ABC is the only broadcast network, the only one that would put a game like that on at 3 o'clock. That was ridiculous. For the men, 9:20, obviously too late.
It is. I mean, again, I'm not like you go on Twitter and just people like, they lose their mind with time starts. And I get it. I admit I'm spoiled, and both of us, John, in some ways are paid to do this. So like we're kind of time starting agnostic because we're going to sort of watch because we're going to watch. I'm not one who's always like, oh my God, save the children and put it on. But like at a certain point, it does get ridiculous. And I thought 9:20 PM is a little ridiculous. You are making a big ask for people who live in the Eastern time zone and the Central time zone to do that. Although my counter would be this, if that game was like great and like, it was like, Michael Jordan versus, Patrick Ewing or whatever in college, you'd stay up. Like, it's just some of it was just about expectation. Like, you see UConn versus Purdue. Maybe like Zach Edey. Like, maybe. Like, if you're a casual sports fan, but you're not, this isn't destination viewing for anyone outside of the diehards. And so, like, I get it in some manner.
A solution to all of this with the men and women in the start times is to flip the dates and have the men go Friday, Sunday, and the women Saturday, Monday.
It's interesting. Used to be like that, right? Women used to be on Monday, I think, if I remember.
No, the women used to be Saturday, Sunday in the CBS era. They'd go back-to-back days, and then it was Sunday, Tuesday for a little while.
Sunday, Tuesday, that's what I was thinking. You're right. Yeah, right.
I do hesitate to make that change because obviously, for the women, Friday, Sunday has been found money. Sunday's a great day. But if you can't get a later time slot on ABC, if you can get all three games on ABC doing Saturday, Monday, then it's worth moving off of Friday, Sunday. And then that opens it up for the men to get Friday, Sunday, which is better for television ratings. And of course, maybe that 5 o'clock start time leading into 60 minutes that does so well for CBS throughout the tournament.
I have seen this proposed. I don't know if it would ever happen because of all the various different entities involved. But do you like the idea of the women and the men having their final on the same day, let's say Sunday, and then flipping every year between like one gets the 6 p.m. slot, one gets the 3 p.m. slot, and you basically create like this mega final college basketball like entire day?
Yeah, I thought about that as well, but I don't know if, then neither gets the day to themselves.
Yeah, which is why, and I think the administrations of each wouldn't want that, but I have seen that kicked around if you're really trying to cater to television.
Right. When CBS had it, they would do basically like the U.S. Open Super Saturday.
Yeah, right.
They would have the women's semifinals in the afternoon leading into the men's at night. Didn't really help the women's, and the viewership disparity on those days is pretty sharp. It's something to think about, but I think it's better to just have them on separate nights.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I mean, I've thought like it would be interesting, just again, as somebody who covered so many women's Final Fours, if like the men and the women were in the same city. But then also like what happens is like you don't really have enough hotel rooms. Like one is inevitably going to get sort of, usually it would have been the women would have get shortchanged versus the other. So I do like them having their own sort of day. I do think, as far as a television play, I think they would help each other, like as lead-ins or lead-outs. Like there's no doubt about that. Television is only one component. All right, we're going to obviously have John back on. John Lewis, of course, is the founder and editor of Sports Media Watch. Check out all his work on that great site. Follow him on Twitter/X as well. Again, if you like these conversations, head to the archives. We've had some interesting ESPN conversations this week. ESPN data strategist Flora Kelly was the guest on this podcast April 8th. James Andrew Miller came on to talk about Norby Williamson this week. And then just head to the archives. There should be a ton of stuff that you appreciate, at least I hope so. And leave us a 5-star review and a nice note. That's how this podcast continues. Want to thank John Lewis, of course, for his time and insight. Thank you to Patrick Antonetti for all his hard work. Thanks to everybody at Odyssey for their support. And thank you for listening. We'll see you soon on the Sports Media Podcast.